actually, the book that precedes Ecstatic Nation is called White Heat, and it's a look at the friendship between Emily Dickinson, a kind of reclusive poet, and a very ardent abolitionist, Thomas Higginson, whose name is more or less lost to us now, but who is the leader of the first federally authorized troop, black troops in South Carolina, which is rather astonishing in and of itself. But then you add to it the fact that he was a friend, of lifetime friend of Emily Dickinson, it becomes even more astonishing. So that book drew me closer to the period both before, during, and after the Civil War. And one of the things that intrigued me about that period was the vast number of people and events crowded together that we don't necessarily expect to be together. Walt Whitman interviewed P.T. Barnum, for example. Thoreau supported John Brown, at least verbally. And it was such a tremendously exciting period that I decided that I wanted to move closer into it and create a different path through it.
And slavery really is sort of the backdrop of what's going on during
Absolutely.
This time. But it didn't define everything that was happening. This was still, as you mentioned, a very exciting time, even if there was this moral failure
in
the country.
No, exactly. I mean, at the same time as you have the discussions about slavery becoming more and more vehement and leading ultimately to war, you have a time of tremendous change and innovation. You have the development of the daguerreotype, which becomes the photograph. So you have a period where, for the first time in history, you can see pictures of people like William Tecumseh Sherman, or as I mentioned, even Emily Dickinson. So you visually see the period. That's unusual. It's a time of tremendous expansion in the country, and particularly, in relation to that is the railroads. Railroads are carrying people, and during the war, men and munitions, but they're carrying people to the West. So the West is being settled. And then, of course, in 1848, you have the gold rush, and you have the sense that the country is not only growing in space, but also there are tremendous more opportunities to make money. And then, of course, during and after the war, we have the rise of the Gilded Age. So it's a very complicated, interesting period, and period of tremendous innovation, because you have all of these events going on, the building of the transcontinental railroad, the development of the transatlantic cable so that you can speak with England. It's really quite amazing when you think of it. It's a very short 30-year period when the technology is taking off enormously.
We are talking with Brenda Wineapple. She's a historian, and she'll be speaking at the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Museum on Thursday night. Her latest book is called Ecstatic Nation. That's what we're talking about today. This period in time in the 1800s, it seems to be something that still fascinates us because, I can look back to, of course, we just had a movie about Lincoln in the last year. There's a new movie out that touches on slavery, 12 Years a Slave. Is it something? Why is that? I guess why this fascination that we continue to have with something so long ago that most of us, have really very little ties to at this point?
Well, it's an interesting question, and you're right. I mean, it's in the popular culture. If you have two, essentially blockbuster movies, The Lincoln and The 12 Years a Slave, focusing on the same period, you do want to say, why are we so interested? Well, the first thing, of course, is there was a civil war, and a civil war in this country is both hard to imagine and easy to imagine because, politics becomes so impassioned and people, stake out very different positions. And here, we have this right now, politics is very fractious. And, of course, we don't want and don't think it will lead to war, but it actually did in the 19th century. So that's one thing. The other thing is the whole issue of slavery, that it actually, that the institution lasted as long as it did until, 1865 and the passage of the 13th Amendment is rather incredible because it's not that long ago, 150 years ago. And, of course, the results are still very much with us because the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment, tremendous legislation for civil rights, but then they almost disappeared in terms of their enactments until you get to the 1960s and the passage of the Civil Rights Act. So in some ways, the discussions that people are having in the middle of the 19th century are still very much with us, and both for good and ill. I mean, we have our first black, president, which was unthinkable and in the period of time I'm talking about, and yet we can see the very results of that period in terms of, how we live today. So I think that there's a kind of fascination also because I mentioned the photograph. We can actually see that period. If you think of the Ken Burns Civil War special on TV of some years ago, one of the things that was so unusual about that it was that he could document that war in terms of the pictures we have of it. So we actually enter that experience pictorially and visually, and it's the first time in America that we've been able to do, had that facility too. So I think there's a set of reasons, and that, as William Faulkner once said, the past is never dead. Sometimes it's not even past. So it's with us today very much.
What do you hope people take away from reading the book? Because I don't know that it was written so much to lecture people necessarily, but it does teach. And what do you hope people get from it?
Well, I hope to teach through entertaining, and I don't mean entertaining in a simple-minded sense, but one gets pleasure in entering a world that's both near to us, as we were just discussing, but also far away, and understanding that many of the issues of today really have resonance. Our issues, we can learn from the past, really. We can see the people of goodwill and good intentions making mistakes, and so we become more empathetic, we become more forgiving, we become more knowledgeable. I think we become, sounds cliche, but we actually become better citizens because we understand our links to other people and a sense of, what it means to live in a country and want to continually make it a more perfect union. I just want to acquaint them with the fact that when we think of that period, 1848 to 1877, and the war inside of it, we tend to think of the war happening in a vacuum. And I guess if I want people to think of anything, it's the fact that the war was one aspect of what was going on in the culture. At the same time as you have Abraham Lincoln and Charles Sumner and Ulysses S. Grant, you have Ralph Waldo Emerson and Emily Dickinson and a woman, Victoria Woodhull, running for president. And it's a very volatile, exciting period where many people we don't think of as talking to one another were actually speaking with one another and really making an effort to do the best that they could.
And it seems to me that history and the way it's written about quite often can overshadow certain people. And certainly with something as dramatic as the Civil War or with somebody like Abraham Lincoln on the national scene, it's easy to understand how that could happen. But really, a lot of these people and their accomplishments were a bit overshadowed at that time.
Exactly. And you're talking about a free African-Americans who were struggling in the abolition movement. You're talking about fugitive slaves that made it to the North and then were sent back in the South. We're talking about the people like you and me, who are not major actors on the historical stage, but who participate, whose lives to ourselves are very important.